Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey folks, we'll talk to Nick Lutzko here in just a second, but did you know the average American has 97 points they can add to their credit score and have no idea how to get those damn points? Well, ScoreMaster is the new credit science that super boosts your credit score. Forget raising your credit score just a few points. The average ScoreMaster user raises their credit score 61 points in 20 days or less. 61 points. I follow my credit score every damn day. And 61 points is just unheard of. Say your credit score was in the high 500s to the mid 600s when you bought that new car. If you'd gone to ScoreMaster first and raised your credit score just the average 61 points our listeners get, you could have saved $9,000 on your car loan. And if you own a business, you know how essential great credit is, from getting a loan to funding projects to financing equipment. Go to ScoreMaster first and see how super boosting your business credit score can save you a fortune. ScoreMaster puts you in control of your finances, not the banks. Enroll in minutes and see how many plus points ScoreMaster can add to your credit score. Visit ScoreMaster.com/offer. ScoreMaster.com/offer. And now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Zeska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, October 14, 2020, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Zeska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. My guest today is one of my favorite indie musicians and one of my favorite satirists. The great Nick Lutzko is here today. If you've been listening to my show recently, you've probably heard his RNC Dan Bongino song or his incredibly funny boat parade song. Two of the funniest damn things I've ever seen online, but Nick is also a serious songwriter and performer, not only recording albums of his own, but he also does regular work for Netflix and College Humor. Links in the description for everything. Meanwhile, if you like what you hear today, don't forget to subscribe to our bonus content at patreon.com/Bob Zeska Show. Okay, here comes the inimitable Nick Lutzko. It looks like you're keeping busy during the pandemic. I mean, beyond all the music writing and work you do on Twitter and so on, Spotify, how are you holding up in all of this with the pandemic and the isolation? I mean, I worry about this with all indie musicians that I know. I mean, how are you able to make ends meet, given that you can't tour and do all the normal things that you would do as an independent recording artist?
Yeah, well, I've been really lucky in that. I mean, I do perform, and I do, you know, release like singles and albums and whatnot, but that isn't where I get my primary income. I do a lot of freelance work for companies like Netflix and College Humor. And I've been lucky in that work hasn't totally dried up during the pandemic, especially for Netflix. So I do Netflix Junior, like kids songs for them, and that all exists on social. So it's almost like with everyone locked indoors, there's almost more of a need for more content.
Oh, that's outstanding.
I'm kind of lucky that I can do all that remote. I don't need to be in a certain city, and don't need to be working with other people. I can kind of just do that in my little lab and push those out fairly quickly. So I've been lucky in that regard. And I'm also lucky that I have a wonderful wife and three cats that have kept me
That's so cool. Yes, and we've all been treated to your wonderful house. That looks like it's got some sort of sauna in the basement. Plus, there's a looks like some kind of golem living under the stairs. So,
yes, yeah, right.
Seems like a nice place. Specifically, tell me about your kids' show. Does that involve, I assume, the puppets as well, or is there a satirical edge to it? Tell me about the Netflix deal.
No, ironically, it's strictly just kind of like a day job way to make, you know, it's just that I write this, they'll reach out, they say they want a song about brushing your teeth or confidence or gratitude or any of those things, and I'll produce a song and then they'll do animation and they'll release that on their socials. It is funny that I have all these puppets and these puppet like people in my band, but that stuff is not, there's really no crossover with the kid stuff.
Right.
The way that that kind of came about for my live show is I've been pursuing music full time for about a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And the first two records I did, I didn't have a band. I just played all the instruments and produced everything myself. And when it came time to start thinking about performing live, I had these puppets that I had made in college just for fun. And
yeah.
The first music video that I made, I decided to use those hand puppets as my backing band mm-hmm. in the music video. And by the time I actually did put together a band, it was just this kind of, it was like, it was a part of the aesthetic of the group. It was like, why don't we try to bring this world that we've created for the music videos to life in the live show by having like these puppet-like creatures. And it's just kind of a way to add a surreal, absurd aspect to the music that I think has kind of lived on through some of the comedy stuff, as you've mentioned, like the man in the stairs and things like that. I'm always kind of trying to get things a little weird and dark whenever I have the opportunity.
And you succeed. 1,000% you succeed. It's so great. I mean, in fact, your live show and the stuff that I've seen on YouTube reminds me a little of the Flaming Lips, their live show. I mean, it's got
awesome,
the puppets, the costumes, the unpredictability. You put on a legitimate show. I mean, it's a big deal that's actually fun to watch. It doesn't seem tortured. Again, it seems effortless. Like so much of your work, irrespective of whether it's live or the comedy material, all of your work seems like it's just breezy for you. I know it's not really that way, but that's how it comes off. What's the ratio for like a live show? What's the ratio of planning versus spontaneity for one of your typical gigs?
Oh man. Well, firstly, I appreciate all the kind words. That's super nice. It's a great question. So we had a really big show in my hometown in Chattanooga towards the end of October, I guess almost exactly a year ago, for the release of my newest record, Swords.
Mm-hmm.
And that was months of preparation. We had giant puppets built. We had this local dance troupe called the Pop-Up Project doing choreography. And we had the shows are very theatrical. And we tried to just kind of, you know, obviously the music is top priority, that everything is performed well and is entertaining, but we also kind of like want to deliver on the visual aspect. And it's funny you mentioned Flaming Lips. That's a great example of the kind of show that we strive to put on. But there's definitely so much preparation, but then also when you're there's not much of a budget going into putting, like, it's all homemade and thrown together, and it's not like we can afford to pay that show we did for Halloween. We had like the UTC marching brass come up, and that was like 20
so awesome.
Horn players come up, and then we have the 15 dancers come up, and then we have like, so it's like we're asking everyone to kind of donate their time.
Mm-hmm.
So there is definitely like a lot of components that are very kind of like thrown together on the spot, and a lot of improvisational performance. Which is great. Yeah, it's fun to have that kind of mixture of the extremely rehearsed with the impromptu.
Yeah, there's something that's extra appealing about doing kind of a high concept, fun, weird show and having it come off as seeming as if you just put it together in the parking lot outside, you know. How did you end up going back to the puppets? I mean, how did you end up landing on puppets as kind of being part of your thing?
Yeah, so I had the puppets. I mean, this is so, it's just funny how like inconsequential it was at the time, but I was in college. Yeah. I was like a sophomore in college, and it was 2011, the Muppets, the like kind of Muppets reboot had just come out.
Oh yeah, with Jason Segel.
And I Loved it. And I think it was almost just kind of, it reminded me how much I loved the Muppets as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, me, it's just so funny to think of what your average college student is doing with their time. Me and my roommates went to Hobby Lobby and bought a bunch of puppet supplies and stayed up and made puppets and shot dumb comedy videos with them. And they're just these things that I had.
Mm-hmm.
So like when it came time to shoot that first music video and I didn't have a band, it was like, okay, I can grab this puppet and put him on guitar and then this puppet can play the drums.
Yeah.
And it was also that first record that I did, someone reviewing it wrote that it sounded like Pee-wee Herman hosting the Beatles at his playhouse or something.
Yeah, like yeah.
That. I loved that imagery, and I kind of mm-hmm. wanted to lean into that aspect mm-hmm. of just like what a rock band would feel like in that world of Pee-wee's playhouse.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God. And it just takes so much effort though to put together a puppet. And I only know this because I recently did an Alex Jones puppet show for Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Tour, but I actually ended up modding just a religious puppet I bought on Amazon that happened to look yeah. like, I mean, it's just all kinds of sacrilege going on there. I'm buying like a Joseph, the father of Christ. I'm buying that puppet and then modding yeah. it to look like Alex Jones. But you build your puppets from scratch, which is a hell of a project. I mean, what's the process? I mean, do you do sketches? Do you plan out where you want to go? Or do you just buy a bunch of materials and start hot glue gunning them together?
Yeah, definitely the latter. I've always kind of referred to it as like punk rock puppetry because I don't know what I'm doing. I cannot That's perform great. My instrument well. I just get out the hot glue gun and I just get to work until something slightly resembles something and they fall apart so easily. And to be totally honest, in the earliest days, yeah, I was making them all myself, but I've kind of got to the point now where I actually like hire, I kind of help brainstorm like the concept and the design. And then I hire professionals to actually execute. And that's why they've, the caliber of a lot of the work has advanced. And also my bass player who goes by Greasy Rick, it's really funny to kind of look at what that early prototype for what his costume was versus what it is now, because he's a really brilliant artist and has taken it and just made it so much better than what I had done originally.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite costumes in the band. Nice. is your bass player's cool. costume. There's something about it that perfectly fits the look of, you know, what a bass player would look like as a puppet. How would you describe that? Like human-sized puppets or puppet costumes?
I don't even know. Yeah. I guess like I kind of go back and forth between it. Because it started as puppetry, but now when they're in the costumes, they're not technically puppets anymore. So it's just like a creature costumes. I don't even know what to call it. But he especially just has this talent to he brings that character to life. Like he doesn't look like a guy in a costume. He looks like a creature. And that's just mm-hmm. a testament of how he kind of embodies that character. It's just really brilliant.
It's almost inconceivable to imagine that there's a gigantic audience for this in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I mean, tell us about living in Chattanooga and playing this music live. Seems like there's just as big an audience for this kind of sort of, I don't even know how to exactly describe the genre. I mean, your music defies genre, but there's clearly an appetite for it in Chattanooga, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that we kind of try to keep people's attention is mm-hmm. we try to just do one big show a year, or maybe a couple.
Yeah.
Maybe one smaller show earlier in the year and then one really big one. And a big part of that is it's not sustainable for the size of the production. We couldn't play every week, but... Mm-hmm. We try to space out the shows that way people are always, you know, it feels like it's not, oh, we could catch them any weekend. It's like you can't miss it. Like this doesn't happen that often. And yeah. We always try to do something a little different and something a little more extravagant, which really gets hard to continue over time.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I mean, it's kind of sad in that, like, the show we did for the album release in Chattanooga was kind of like the prototype for what we wanted to kind of take on the road. And we booked the biggest venue in Chattanooga, I mean, I'm sure there's bigger venues, but it's a venue called The Signal, and it's like probably like a 1,500 capacity. And we just tried to go as big as we possibly could, and we got all the video shot of it, and the goal was to kind of like package that up and try to take that on the road this year. And then the pandemic hit early this year and kind of foiled those plans, which kind of forced the pivot of the Twitter stuff I've been doing.
Is the limited number of shows, is that a consequence of the elaborate nature of the shows, or is that just kind of how you'd prefer to do it? Like, it's just, this should be something that's special, not something that's just churned out one weekend after another.
Yeah, it's kind of a combination of both, and it's also it's strategical in that we don't want to burn out the audience, and it's something that once, if it gets to a point where we are playing regularly on the road, I don't know. I mean, I'd been at a place in my past where it was like you're playing every week, and that's how a lot of the ways I was making a living. But I think I also got lucky in that I was finding other ways to make a living through like freelance production and songwriting and whatever else that I didn't need to play every week.
Yeah. Going back to genre here, the music that you perform live, the music on your albums, it also has this almost maniacal offbeat style that, as I said before, it doesn't land in any particular genre. How would you describe the music that you write and record? I mean, outside of the comedy stuff.
Yeah, man, it's another tricky question. I just feel like since the beginning of time, I've always had this issue with identifying what it is I do exactly, and this comedy stuff has just made it even more confusing. But I think my go-to is alternative music.
Yeah.
It's a little tricky because I feel like when that phrase came on the scene, it was given to bands like Nirvana and Primus and the Red Hot Chili Peppers, who were an alternative to what you were hearing on the radio, which was a lot of like Bon Jovi and Guns N' Roses. But then somewhere in the 90s, alternative just kind of became adopted as, your stereotypical 90s rock.
Yeah.
And so like, that's kind of where I have some trouble there, where I think, the original meaning of the term is pretty true to what we're doing, in that like, it's an alternative to whatever you're hearing on the radio or the mainstream. But I do think that the preconceived idea of what alternative music is does kind of go towards that 90s like Matchbox 20 Goo Goo Dolls sound or whatever.
Right.
But I mean, psychedelic rock is another one we've thrown around, indie rock, there's all these kind of vague, but I've never really landed on anything I'm like, yep, that's it. That's what this is.
How did you land on the xylophone as a lead instrument?
Nice. Yeah. That's actually kind of an interesting, journey there. So when it finally came time to kind of assemble my band, the first iteration of the band was myself on guitar, a bass player, a drummer, and a percussionist.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of a weird... I wasn't writing a lot of music that needed percussion.
Yeah.
But he was the guy that kind of filled that role initially, was just someone who was available and interested in playing, and it was like, just kind of see what we can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really added a lot, and you know, like there was like some conga stuff and just other like auxiliary percussion, tambourines and stuff, and it was nice, but I really was wishing there was more of like a melodic element there.
Yeah.
And when I learned that he had also played xylophone in school, I was like, oh, we got to get the xylophone in here. And that person in particular wasn't in the band for that long, mainly because he wasn't that interested in playing xylophone. That wasn't like his primary instrument. But I did realize how much I liked having that. And like, there's just not many rock bands that have a featured xylophonist.
Yeah.
And around that time, I have a younger brother. He was just graduating high school, and he was taking percussion in school, and he'd played piano his whole life, and he'd, you know, done xylophone as the percussion focus that he did in school.
Mm-hmm.
And my little brother ended up joining the band. At first, it was him just coming up and playing songs on xylophone that the few songs that I had started writing with xylophone as a focal point. But over time, we kind of gave him a larger and larger role, and now he's, you know, one of the featured members of the group, and it's one of my favorite parts of the band.
Well, one of the things I wanted to do when I reached out to you is see if I could twist your arm into performing a couple of songs live here on the show. Do you want to start with something from one of your albums and perform that for us here? Or do you, maybe we could save the, because I got to hear either Bongino or Boat Parade later in the show. Sure. But in the meantime, cool. Maybe we start with one of your songs from one of the albums or maybe something you're working on. It's completely up to you.
Yeah, cool, man. I'll play you the song sometimes. This song is seemed to do really well on Spotify.
Oh yeah, this is number one right now on Spotify on your page. Yeah,
number one on the charts.
Yep,
number one on iTunes. Swinging for the fences, hanging from the moon. I cut my tongue on the rust of a silver spoon. I bet my belly bottom dollar on a hopeless case. And now the devil on my shoulder has a knife in my face. Sometimes the Jordan of the stick is the sharpest. Sometimes the only road to take is the darkest. And sometimes all you gotta say is that it make it go away. Sometimes the only way out is as a carcass. While he's watching you, I got two girls in the furnace. I've been on both sides of the glass, but ain't nobody made a monkey out of my monkey ass. Sometimes the short end of the stick is the sharpest. Sometimes the older or the dick is the darkest. Sometimes I ain't gotta say that it make it go. Sometimes the older way out is out the carcass. Sometimes you gotta finish what you shouldn't have started. Sometimes you gotta shoot before you see the target. Sometimes daddy's gonna say you're not worth the price of pay. Sometimes the tunnel only leads to darkness. You build a ship, you did, and all go down with it. Postman's gone away and you begin to understand. You're no hero to this story, you're just another wretched pawn. Who bought his tickets to the sideshow and then slept through the alarm. Sometimes shorter than the stick is the sharpest. Sometimes the only road to take is the darkest. And sometimes all you gotta say is that it make it go away. Sometimes the only way out is as a carcass. Sometimes the shorter than the stick is the sharpest. Sometimes the order on the dick is the darkest. Sometimes all you gotta say is that it make it go away. Sometimes the only way out is out of carcass. Sometimes you gotta finish what you shouldn't have started. Sometimes you gotta shoot before you see the target. Sometimes daddy's gonna say you're not worth the price you pay. Tunnel only leads to darkness. You live.
Nick Lutzko, amazing. Oh, God, I love that song. That is the title track, Sometimes, from your album of the same name from 2019. That's also available on all the different digital music platforms, right?
Yep. And I do have physical copies for sale on Bandcamp, nickletzko.bandcamp.com.
When did you first start recording music and writing music professionally? It wasn't too long ago, was it?
Yeah. I went to MTSU for commercial songwriting. I graduated there in 2012. And I spent the next few years kind of just traveling around and playing acoustic shows and mainly playing for tips and kind of saving up that money to get some recording equipment to record an album. Mm. And I put out two albums, one in 2013, another in 2015. And I guess it was 2016, late 2016, when I got my first job writing for Super Deluxe. I did Emo Trump tweets. It was it's actually, not to just give this really long story, but I was a big fan of Vic Berger at Super Deluxe.
Mm-hmm.
And him and Tim Heidecker were doing an election special for the RNC and the DNC.
Yeah.
And I was kind of following their coverage, and I recorded like this 15-second little jingle that I unsolicited tweeted at them and said, hey, don't know if you guys need a theme song, but here it is.
Wow.
And they both loved it, and they ended up actually making it the official theme song for those election specials. And from there, Super Deluxe was producing it. So I kind of had some correspondence with them to make sure that they had the permission to use it and whatever else. And I just was like, hey, I'm trying to do this for a living. not super successful. You know, it's not that I wasn't making money. It's just every cent that I made was going back into investing into turning it into something that was sustainable. And my producer at Super Deluxe, we kind of had an ongoing conversation for a few months, and then he finally pitched me on the idea. He was like, yeah, Trump's tweets have been especially emo today. I don't know if you can you can make a song out of his tweets from the last however many hours have been. And I felt like I had so much to prove that I like didn't go to sleep that night. I just like I recorded it. I probably sent them a finished product within like 8 hours.
Yeah.
And they posted it and did really well, and that was just kind of the beginning. Super Deluxe shut down in, I think, October of 2018. That was the beginning of a two-year partnership where I was doing, I think by then I was doing two songs a month for them, and the most successful thing I did for them was Alex Jones is an indie folk song.
Oh, yes, that's right. I've seen that one, too. That's so great, yeah.
Yeah, thanks. And that was a really cool experience, but it was this weird thing where it was really my day job. It wasn't what I was, you know, I was still pushing the album work and I was doing this comedy work, but I didn't really feel like a comedian because this weird job had just kind of fallen into my lap. And I kind of felt like I hadn't earned it because it wasn't something that I had been pursuing.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about that. I mean, how did you end up landing on comedy? Was that an aspiration of yours at any point? I mean, you were saying you were doing like puppet show videos in your college dorm and stuff like that. But did you have some sort of ambition to eventually do song parodies and comedy like that?
Yeah, I've always loved it and I've always been such a fan. But in school, I kind of was like naturally, you know, like I'm not going to say I don't think that I'm not a funny person, but I never had the confidence to. I think it's mainly because music has always been so obviously my number one thing that it was like, it was always this kind of thing that was like, you know, I think maybe I could be good at it, but don't know. It almost felt unearned or something. Like, it's kind of a weird thing to. I kind of touched on it earlier, but that the Chrissy Teigen song, I think was, this is so stupid, but I kind of have considered it my like coming out as a comedian moment.
Right.
It's like,
right.
I'm going to actually like commit to this and quit kind of dancing around like, you know, these confidence issues I have with like, putting something out like under my name that isn't a job for someone else.
Well, that's what's so crazy, Nick, is because you come off as eminently confident. I think that's one of the reasons why your comedy lands so well as your album-oriented music. There's a swagger about it. There's something that where you own what you're doing. You know, I've been doing this for a long time. I've been working in cartoons. And in fact, you and I both did work for College Humor. I don't know if it was at the same time, but I was doing cartoons for them. It's almost impossible to find that magic formula of what goes viral and what doesn't. But I found that maybe part of it is just owning what you're doing. You can always tell if someone's hesitating a little bit when they're putting out something out into the world that's supposed to be funny. It seems like you just don't give a shit whether it's well-received or not. And maybe that's why it goes viral. That's maybe why it's so successful. Have you been able to put your finger on exactly what it is about the more comedic-oriented songs that you do that seem to make them go crazy like that online?
I really have no idea. And I think what you just touched on probably is pretty valid. If I had to chalk it up to anything, I've kind of felt that musical comedy in a lot of ways, I feel like typically the music only needs to be good enough to get the joke across.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of times you have people who are comedians first and foremost and musicians second.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that's not the case all the time, but that's just something that I feel like, you know, in like sketch comedy shows, that's usually the case. And I feel like I come from the reverse where music, you know, songwriting, production, performing, that is my world. And I think I treat the writing and the production of the music just as seriously as I would my album work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is something that kind of takes people off guard. It's like, wow, why does this song, this about gremlins, like,
which is also a good one.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
Who would think to put this much work into something so dumb? And I think that's kind of another part of it. It's like, okay, there's obviously some talent here, but the narrator of this song is just so unhinged and like clueless that the dichotomy of the two things I think people really enjoy.
Okay, we'll get back to our conversation with Nick Lutzko here in just a second, but did you know the average American has 97 points they can add to their credit score and still have no idea how to get them? Well, ScoreMaster is the new credit science that super boosts your credit score. Forget raising your score just a few points. The average ScoreMaster user raises their credit score 61 points in 20 days or less. And if you've gone a credit score before applying for a home loan and raised your score just the average 61 points our listeners get, you could have saved almost $100,000 on the life of your loan. ScoreMaster puts you in control of your finances, not the banks. Enroll in minutes and see how many plus points ScoreMaster can add to your credit score. Visit ScoreMaster.com/offer. ScoreMaster.com/offer. And with so many changes going on in the world nowadays, it feels like every day there's something new. But there's one thing that you can count on. It's that looking good makes you feel great. And we could all use a little bit of that these days. And if you have under eye bags, dark circles, or crow's feet, imagine that they're gone without making an appointment or leaving the house. It's called Plexiderm. That's what we're talking about. It's a clinically studied serum that visibly reduces the signs of aging in 10 minutes and lasts up to 10 hours. Add some confidence in your life knowing you look your best, even if you're having a makeup-free day. Plexiderm goes on clear, so nobody's going to know that you're using it. And that's, in fact, why guys like it. And Plexiderm works great with oil-free makeup. Today, you could try a 6-day application trial pack for just $14.95 with free shipping when you visit buyplx.com/voices or call 1-800-685-1292 and give the code VOICES. Order today, shipping is free, and it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Make those wrinkles, lines, and under-eye bags disappear with Plexiderm. Visit buyplx.com/voices or call 1-800-685-1292 and say the code VOICES at checkout. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
So I want to get into this now because I've been playing the Dan Bongino song and completely without your permission. I've been playing the Dan Bongino song and the Boat Parade song, giving you full credit, of course, obviously, on my podcast over and over again. Everyone loves this. My girlfriend, Kimberly Johnson, also does a podcast. She thinks Boat Parade is the funniest goddamn thing she has ever seen in her entire life. And it's the yelling at the end. It's the screaming. Yeah. I've been referring to, especially these two videos, as being aggressive mockery. I don't know if that's at all accurate. I don't know if that was your intention to aggressively mock people like Dan Bongino or these boat parades. But let's start with Bongino. I mean, how did that idea form in your head? And is aggressive mockery at all in the ballpark of what you're trying to do?
Yeah, I think that hits the nail on the head, and it, at least in some kind of subconscious way. I think, so as I kind of touched on, these songs I've been doing, it's basically like my typical work week. It's like, okay, say this week I'm working on a College Humor video, and next week I have a Netflix video, and if I have one day in between, like a Friday open, it's like, that's the day I'm going to sit down and write and record and shoot a video and upload it. I want to do it all in that one day free that I have. And that's exactly what happened with the RNC. It's just, I woke up that morning. I didn't have a job due immediately. And I just got online and I saw like the RNC was starting that week. And it was like, okay, I guess I'm writing a song about the RNC. And
see, that's what I mean. That's like the effortless place that it comes from. It's not like you're necessarily slaving over this, like, and you've got, you know, you got a whiteboard up there and you're kind of charting out how to go with this, creating an outline. It seems like it was just like, oh, RNC, let's do that.
Yeah. And I mean, that is the true difference between this comedy stuff and my album work, because the album stuff is like truly, like I do slave over it for probably, and like, I think I've learned that like, it's not necessarily to the song's benefit, like, because I've realized how strongly people react to these things that I throw together in sometimes hours. But yeah, I started writing the RNC song specifically. And those first few lines were just so, I want to be at the RNC. And it's like, I'm looking at the list of people who are going to be like, okay, McCloskey, we just learned about them 2 minutes ago, but I'll throw that in there. Yeah. And then it got to the, I want to sit with, and it was like, okay, who am I going to put in this song? And it was like, I don't know how I landed on Dan Bongino, but it's just like, his name is just so fun to sing that it was just like, as soon as I came up with it, it was like, there's not really a real point here, but yeah, that's what I'm going with.
Oh, and he's perfect to include. That was, you landed on exactly the right person, because he's very easy to rankle, by the way. Has he blocked you yet?
He hasn't. That's actually, it's a little disappointing. He hasn't so much as even acknowledged it. Although, there has definitely been some sketchiness. The tweet was flagged as sensitive material, like, oh my at its God. Peak viral moment, I felt like, as it was just kind of really picking up steam. It like got blocked. And if you're already following me and you're already engaged, you can't see it. But if you were to go on my page through a new Twitter account, it kind of like it's like blurred out, and it's like you have to click to approve the sensitive material. And there's nothing inappropriate about that song or that video. I'm convinced that there was like some kind of right wing troll farm that like mass flagged it or something.
Yeah.
To make that happen. And that's the closest I've gotten to any kind of recognition from him or his people, I presume.
I love how you're not trying to make some sort of sophisticated argument against all this crap. You're almost hitting like Dan Bongino and Trump's like raging id with your own raging id.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Am I reading too much into it?
No, I think that's my favorite part about that song in particular, is like, it's so obviously like topical. Like it was the, like, I wake up writing a song about the RNC, but then when you listen to it, it's like not, it's not about the RNC, and it's not at the same time. Like, it's about this crazy guy who idolizes Dan Bongino and the RNC, but he doesn't really even understand it or get why. Like, he respects the flag so much, but he doesn't even recognize how you're supposed to like recognize the flag or what it stands for. Mm-hmm. And he has this man under his like, nothing makes sense about it. But I think you kind of, yeah, you nailed it in that, like, there's something about this guy's blind, angry enthusiasm that is just in sync with Trump supporters. Like, and it works in, like, a very abstract way,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah. I mean, do you ever hear from Trump supporters who mistake the videos for being pro-Bongino? I mean, it seems like right at the beginning, I think that's one of the reasons it works so well, is right at the beginning, you're not quite sure whether you're actually for real or not. And that's kind of the best satire, when you're initially unaware that it's satire, and then, and then it starts to evolve, and there's the man in the stairs. That's when you realize, oh, shit, this is not what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Man, I think slightly unrelated to your question, but one thing that was so perfect and the reason that thing did so well is, I released it. I wasn't even aware it was happening, but I released it at the same time that Donald Trump Jr. was giving his speech. And like, if you play the script, like, his face was red and sweaty. Like, it was like, it was the same energy. And that was the meat. It was like, oh my God, how did this just, it's like this guy just saw into the future and saw Donald Trump's speech and like simultaneously released this song. Like, it was this weird, like, supernatural coincidence that happened there that was pretty amazing. But, I've run into that a lot, where especially the Alex Jones song that I did for Super Deluxe was the worst example of his fans just totally co-opted that song. And he himself played it on his show, and he had a freaking competition of he had like a $20,000 competition to see who could do the best cover of it. Oh my God. It's blatantly mocking him, but somehow his fans just love it.
See, that's great. That is perfect. That is a huge victory for you. Yeah. You were able to infiltrate in a way that they had no idea. I mean, maybe Alex Jones knows, or maybe one of his producers know. I mean, I've had interactions with those people, and you can always kind of hear a little bit of a snicker behind the scenes. Like, yeah. I don't know if we take all of this seriously, what he's saying out there on stage. It just doesn't make any sense.
He tried to go on his show and say something insane like, I have intel. We have intel that we have fans at Super Deluxe, and they sold this to the higher ups at Super Deluxe under the guise of mocking me, but really they're fans of mine, and they know that this song is going to red pill millions of Americans. And like, he has this whole story of how this song was some elaborate attempt to, in his terms, red pill.
Oh, that's so great. So you're actually now part of the globalist conspiracy, Nick.
Yes, exactly. On his side, apparently.
Yeah. That's right. So I got to ask you, you mentioned the sweating. Is the profuse sweating real? Is that intentional, or is that just part of the anger of the character you're playing?
It's definitely not real. I don't know if I'm quite ready to reveal all my secrets in that realm. I feel like there's probably going to be a great reveal at some point, but I definitely have a method to get myself to where I am.
Yeah.
In these videos. Yeah, I don't naturally just
just break out and profuse, like, have a visible. Yeah. You don't have a visible layer of slime on you at all times.
Right, yes, yeah.
The thing that is so great, it's by the end of the Bongino video, but especially the end of the Boat Parade video. At the end of those videos, you look like I feel most days following this. I mean, I got to cover this shit up close. I'm just my face pressed against computer screen 24/7 and just ingesting the madness, just sticking my face in the plasma that's zipping through my living room every day. And so I feel like that. I feel like that character. When your mouth starts bleeding because you're screaming Boat Parade so loudly, I'm like, I have so been there. I don't know if a lot of people can say that, but yeah, I have been there.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Was Boat Parade another one of those like one-day projects, or did it take an extended period of time to put all that together? Because you did a lot of exterior work in there too, huh?
Yeah, I think all of these songs that I've just started writing for Twitter over the last few months, they probably have a little bit of an improvisational quality, just because like part of the limitations that I put upon myself is it's kind of like I'm wanting to learn to trust my instincts more and just kind of go with the first idea and just like do it. Mm-hmm. I got touched on this earlier, but like I've really like a lot of songs on that record Swords were probably 3 years of just toiling and a lot of stuff that probably didn't need to, and just learning to trust like my first, like it's kind of funny because with the RNC song, it's like this melody, it just started with the melody. I'm like, I wanna be da da da. And my first instinct was like, this is too simple. It's so silly. People are like, I had no idea. I really, truly did not believe that anyone would. I was like, this is going to be my first dud since I started doing that stuff. And every time I kind of like really commit and just go with those first guttural instincts, I keep, you know, people react to it well. So I'm just like telling myself, you know, lean into it.
But
to answer your question, I do a lot of these songs. Some of them I've done like in the course of like an 8-hour day. The Boat Parade one, I think I did start on like late one evening, and I basically got the song mapped out, and then I went and shot all of the exterior stuff like the next morning, and then I had the song posted by like the next afternoon. So they all usually kind of exist within this 24-hour period of writing to recording to shooting the video to posting.
So I'd love to hear a live version of one of these two songs, but I don't want to specifically ask for Boat Parade because you probably have work to do for the rest of the day that you might need your voice for. And I imagine doing that last section of Boat Parade, I don't know if you were able to actually speak for like 24 hours after you were done recording that, but take your pick. If you want to do one of these songs, it's your choice as to which one. To me, they're just equally hilarious. So I'm all for either one of them.
Well, I'm going to do RNC.
Okay, great.
I didn't prepare Boat Parade. And you're right. It probably would murder my voice anyways. Yeah. But
okay, here we go.
All right. You got the exclusive here, man. This is the first time I've ever performed this song in any real capacity. A lot of times I record, and then it's done. It's,
beautiful.
There's no reason. I mean, it's not like I'm playing the clubs these days. Okay. I want to be at the RNC. I want to see Patricia McCloskey. I want to scream for the GOP. I want to sit with Dan Bongino. I want to show the American flag. Hangs behind the toilet in Grandma's basement. I want to ask him if he'll be my dad. I want to change my name to Nick Bongino. I want to tell him about the man in the stairs. He kind of looks like Dan Bongino. Grandma tries to tell me not to go down there. But I will be safe with Dan Bongino. I want to be at the RNC. I want to be like Dan Bongino. I want to be at the RNC. I want to be like Dan Bongino.
Oh. All right. Oh, that is just so great. And, you know, again, for me, I've had many run-ins with Dan Bongino on Twitter. One of the things he loves to do is he loves to troll you, then block you, and then continue to attack you after you've been blocked. And so just anything that kind of sticks it to him, I'm all in favor of. And this is just really great. I mean, do you ever listen to one of these songs and scare yourself? I mean, do you ever go, holy shit, what is going on in my brain right now, and do I need to get outside more?
Yeah, every day.
I got to ask you, too. Did Spirit Halloween really deposit money in your Venmo?
Yeah, they did. They really did.
Oh, my God. Can I ask how much they put in your Venmo? Was it $1,000 for 100 retweets?
So it was not the specific amount that I requested, and I usually would be happy to share the amount with you, but I did. I just had the Spirit... I had the New York Times reach out about that song.
Oh, my God.
They also asked for the specific amount, and I reached out to Spirit just to make sure they were cool with it, and they specifically requested that I do not reveal the amount that I was paid. So,
okay, fair enough,
To keep the gods at Spirit Halloween happy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you actually did a service for them, and because until I watched your video, I thought it was called Halloween Spirit. I had no idea that it was actually Spirit Halloween, because Spirit Halloween is kind of like saying Christmas Merry or Birthday Happy. Yeah. It seems backwards.
If you guys promise to keep it secret, as I know the internet often does, I will give the exclusive to your listeners that the Spirit Halloween saga is not completed.
Oh, man.
There is more to come. So stay tuned.
Yeah. See, that was another one, too, where it took this turn toward the end that was so perfect, where it goes from being just this thing about Spirit Halloween and the fact that they've got ghouls and skeletons into just a straight-on attack against Jeff Bezos, which is just Jeff Bezos killed all of these retail stores and now opened them up for Spirit Halloween. It's a perfect statement. So I wanted to ask you, too, are your parents still around, and do they follow your career, or do they maintain a safe distance from Twitter or what?
I live in the same hometown of my parents.
Oh, great.
And, they're great. They've been really supportive. They're definitely, it's actually very funny because my mom, every new video, I don't know if you've seen the one about baby blood. That one is probably, upset she got. Mm. Yeah. She was not into that. And she was like, what? And especially when I started doing the real sweaty, she was like, what are you doing? You're alienating all of your fans and blah, blah, blah. But she sees them do well. And she's kind of gotten to the point. She's like, I'm done. She's like, you kind of seem like you know what you're doing. I'm gonna stop critiquing these. And now it's been a while since she's always been so supportive of everything I do, and she's awesome. Even if at first she's somewhat doesn't get it.
Yeah, right.
Fully.
Yeah, I know. Coming from cartoons, I know exactly how that is. I think my first big viral cartoon had the word cocksucker in it. So I was just like, hey, mom. Look at this cartoon. It's going crazy on the internet. And no, no. Why did you do this to me, Bob?
Yeah, right.
So what's next for you? What are you working on at the moment? What's going on? What you mentioned you've got maybe some more with Spirit Halloween, but anything else going on?
Yeah, that's the big thing. I'm staying busy. I got a couple jobs I'm juggling with Netflix and Netflix Junior right now. Got a couple freelance things I'm doing with College Humor. I think that's all I can talk about right now.
Okay, gotcha.
But I've enjoyed making these songs so much that I really just am working towards those off days where I can dedicate just to making these weird songs and just like, yeah, really exercising these weird demons that, like, you know, just sitting down and like, I don't know how Gremlins ended up being the topic of my life, you know, but like, it's like you sit down and it's the first thing to come to mind. It's like, all right, this is what we're doing today. And
well, I swear to God, it is so cathartic. As I said before, I absorb this stuff osmotically throughout all day, every day. I'm on Twitter, on the political blogosphere, and there's lots of bullshit comedy out there that just doesn't work. It just doesn't land. But every single thing that you have done has made me laugh out loud repeatedly. You know, and I know, speaking for my listeners, everyone's walking around singing Boat Parade. That's the thing that I hear that's most often. There's like, oh, Bob, I can't stop singing Boat Parade, and thank you for it. Thank you for playing Nick's music. So please keep up the amazing work, Nick. It's invaluable. It's absolutely cathartic to have this around, especially right now, with all the stress and just this ongoing low-frequency mayhem that we're all kind of absorbing. The website is nicklutzko.com. The latest album is called Swords, available on Spotify and everywhere you get your digital music. Links in the description, by the way. And the Twitter account is at Nick Lutzko. That's LUTSKO. Nick, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for performing these live songs for us. And I can't wait for the next song to drop.
Yeah, thank you, Bob. It's been awesome.
Okay, thanks, my friend. Take care.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye.
For directions to the boat parade, gonna get a sunburn standing out here all day, trying to get a ticket to the boat parade.
I appreciate the voters for coming.
Boat parade, boat parade, gonna meet a lady at the boat parade. Forgot my shoes at home and now my feet are turning gray. Missing grandma's birthday for the boat parade. Boat parade, 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 boat parade.
And I just wish I had time. I'd get on one of those boats and I'd be carrying a flag also. It looks like you're having a good time and the whole world is watching.
Boat parade, 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 boat parade.
With so many changes going on in the world nowadays, it feels like every day there's something new. But there's one thing that you can count on. It's that looking good often makes you feel really good, too. And we could all use just a little bit more of that. If you have under eye bags, dark circles, or crow's feet, imagine that those things are gone, vanished, without making an appointment with a plastic surgeon or leaving the house. It's called Plexiderm, a clinically studied serum that visibly reduces the signs of aging in just 10 minutes and lasts up to 10 hours. Add some confidence in your life, knowing you look your best. Even if you're having a makeup-free day, Plexiderm goes on clear, so nobody's going to know that you're using it unless you tell them. And that's why guys like it too. And Plexiderm works great with oil-free makeup. Today, you can try a 6-day application trial pack for just $14.95 with free shipping when you visit www.buyplx.com/voices or call 800-685-1292 and give the code Voices. Order today. Shipping is free and it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Make those wrinkles, lines, and under-eye bags disappear with Plexiderm. Visit buyplx.com/voices or call 800-685-1292 and say the code Voices at checkout. Thank you.